To the right, to the right. Welcome to Blurbs. If you like birds, if you like knowledge, then my friend, you find yourself in the right place. Hi, I'm Matt, bird enthusiast from New Zealand. Let's get into it. To the right. Shorebirds display an array of beak morphologies that allow them each to take advantage of a slightly different food source or feeding area within their habitat. But one bird stands apart, not only from other shorebirds, but also from every other bird in the world. The wryebill, or wry-billed plover, is the only bird with a sideways curved beak. Its scientific name, Anorhynchus frontalis, literally translates to bent bill. Now, here we go again with the beak bill battle. As I mentioned in episode 6 on the Huia, these terms seem to be interchangeable. I have a personal preference for beak, but hey, every now and then I'll probably chuck a bill in there. I'll just see where the mood takes me. Anyway, back on track. The wrybill is a New Zealand endemic, grey on top, apart from a white forehead stripe, and all white underneath, except during the breeding season where they develop a black stripe on the upper chest. Males only also develop a black line above the forehead when in breeding plumage. They are around 20 centimetres long, weighing in at about 55 grams, and current estimates suggest a population size of around 5,000 individuals. The oldest individuals recorded have been at least 18 years old. Wrybill breeding grounds are on braided riverbeds in the eastern South Island of New Zealand. Braided rivers are those with multiple channels that split off and reconnect at various points, forming a branch-like pattern across the landscape. The relatively drab colours of the wrybill allow them to camouflage in extremely well with the river rocks and sediment that they nest on. This allowed them to escape detection in pre-colonial New Zealand, where their main predators were birds of prey circling overhead. Another cool camouflage adaptation relates to their eggs. Wrybills normally start breeding after 2 years and lay clutches of 2 eggs. The eggs have evolved to be coloured just like the stones around them, and so even though the nest is just a shallow scrape on the ground, the eggs are visually extremely hard to detect. Now I reckon the male wrybill might take offence to me saying its nest is just a shallow scrape on the ground, because he's the one that spends time creating it, hollowing a depression in the ground and lining it with small rocks, either by flicking them in or even by swallowing and then regurgitating them. That's some good commitment, so hats off to you, Mr. Wrybill. Now, I've been beating around the bush, or maybe, more appropriately for today, scraping around the rocks. So let's get to talking about the most distinct feature of the wrybill, its beak. To the right, to the right. The first two-thirds of a wrybill's black beak are pretty standard, straight as an arrow. But the final third is always curved to the right at an angle of 12 to 26 degrees. In its breeding grounds, those braided rivers, it uses its beak like a spoon to sweep under rocks and flip them to get at food sources such as mayfly and caddisfly larvae. When not in the breeding season, wrybills migrate to mudflats and estuaries in the North Island of New Zealand. And here, they sweep their bill in a scythe-like manner to get at food of many varieties, including crustaceans and bivalves. Interestingly, foraging movements are largely done in a left-to-right motion when in riverine habitats, whereas they are done in a more right-to-left motion when swishing through mudflats. This counterbalancing of use, so to speak, may explain why, despite beak asymmetry, the wrybill appears to have otherwise symmetrical skeletal and muscular anatomy of the head and the neck. Wrybills can make up to 100 foraging movements in a minute. They are very adept at their unique style of feeding. Other than males being slightly larger, including beak length, there is no shape difference between the sexes. This indicates that the curved beak shape evolved as a means to feed in the specific ways outlined above, rather than playing a role in sexual selection. The ryebill has an unusually long beak when compared to other types of plover, a subfamily of wading birds that characteristically have short beaks. Closely related species, including the banded dotterel and the New Zealand dotterel, all have typical beak shapes, thus suggesting the ryebill of the ryebill developed independently from ancestors with the same normal beak shapes. To the right, to the right. Now, moving on to migration, pun intended, I've touched on the two main locations where ryebills spend their time, the South Island in the breeding season and the North Island in the non-breeding season. These birds travel in flocks of up to 1,000 individuals, that's 20% of their total population in one bunch. With this internal, aka within country migration, covering a distance of between 700 to 950 kilometres. Ryebills begin migration south in August and briefly stop at more coastal sites before making the last push of 200 kilometres to inland breeding grounds. In migration terms, this pit stop is called a staging area. They can cover this last distance in about 3 hours, having been observed travelling at speeds of 60 kilometres an hour plus. So it's not clear why this brief stopover of between 1 to 4 days occurs. However, it may be a behavioural adaptation to wade out adverse weather conditions or flooding inland. We'll talk about the role of flooding in relation to ryebill habitat in the next section. Fledglings and failed breeders will start to migrate north in late November, but the main exodus occurs in late December to early January, with the breeding season being completely wrapped up by February. To the right! While the hook for creating this episode was the unique, laterally curved beak of the ryebill, again, pun intended, another topic that I found to be arguably even more interesting was the interplay between nesting habitat, food availability, flooding, and predation. Ryebills prefer to nest near the edge of water, on the banks and temporary islands created by the interwoven channels of the braided rivers. And I'm sure that you caught that, temporary. These rivers are glacially fed and also impacted by storms, with these environmental influences causing regular variation in river flow. When flow is increased, it causes smaller, aka minor channels, to become larger, which changes the land-to-water ratio. These islands are therefore unstable, varying in existence from just a few days to years. Certainly, evidence shows that flooding is responsible for the destruction of many nests. Laying a second clutch of eggs in one breeding season is a common occurrence in ryebill. This is called double brooding and is likely an adaptation to account for flooding-induced losses. But why would these birds take such a gamble in the first place? Well, as with all behaviours and adaptations which evolve, the benefits must generally outweigh the downfalls. While flooding can destroy nests, it also assists with clearing away and keeping the area vegetation-free. This is important for providing a landscape of suitable nesting habitat for all that camouflaging we talked about earlier, and also means that mammalian predators have less places to hide. Moreover, the larger channels of water create a physical barrier against some predators. Main predator types of the ryebill and ryebill nests include hedgehogs and stoats. As mentioned earlier, the ryebill evolved in a world free of mammalian predators, with their previous biggest threats, birds of prey, using sight for detection. The defence mechanisms that they have therefore developed are not as effective against mammals who mostly use smell when hunting. Unfortunately, the arrival of rabbit hemorrhagic disease in 1997 has reduced the availability of rabbits for stoats to eat. It appears that this has led to prey switching, with stoats more heavily focusing on ryebills than ever before. When evolving in a mammalian-free world, trends seen in birds include laying less eggs per clutch, an extended time taken to reach breeding age, and less wariness of ground animals. Certainly, the 2 eggs per clutch is lower than what is common for other similar birds, and, as mentioned, sexual maturity is not reached for 2 years. Both factors slow the rate at which population numbers can increase, especially in the face of increased predation. Records also show that although ryebills will leave the nest if humans are close by, they often return when the threat has only moved a few meters away, thus doing a poor job of keeping the nest location secret. Now we come to the topic of the size and flow rates of braided river channels and how these influence the ryebill. Minor channels, those with low flow, have a greater density of biomass, aka food for the ryebill, when compared to major channels, those with a high flow rate. So, minor channels are a preferred habitat type. Nests will often be separated by a few hundred meters, but overall territory size will be smaller when dominated by minor channels, as less area is needed for adequate food supply. Ryebills must account for flooding-induced changes, however, and have a habitat that is large enough to sustain them, even during periods of increased water flow where biomass density is lower. Additionally, the minor channels can't get too minor, or they'll dry up, leading to reduced food and easy access for predators. Unfortunately, mammalian predators are not the only threat that humans have introduced for the ryebill. Hydroelectric operations have caused the permanent flooding of some breeding habitat and the drying out of others. The use of water for irrigation practices has also contributed to the latter. Ryebills have a high fidelity to natal rivers, that is, they return to nest near the location where they were raised, often within 10 kilometres. This means that permanent destruction of habitat from these sources not only leads to a reduction in available breeding range right now, but also means that even if these changes are reversed in the future, it's unlikely that ryebill will have the instinct to recolonize these areas, as that's not where they were born. Furthermore, land vehicles can crush nests, and jet boat spray can cause additional flooding, which damages nests and injures young. To the right, to the right! From its unique beak, to camouflaged eggs, to building homes on flood-prone lands, the ryebill is an extremely interesting bird. It's been a pleasure to research and to shed light on yet another of New Zealand's spectacular endemic species. I'd like to thank my patrons. We're up to 2. If you'd like to join the ranks and become an endemic blurb as well, you can do so at patreon.com/blurbs439. Link is in the show notes alongside the references used to inform this episode. The support will help my dream of turning this passion for birds into a part-time job. As a special thank you, I'm sending a 2024 calendar of my own photos, each depicting a different bird I've encountered in New Zealand this year, to all paid members. I really, really appreciate you and hope to do more things like this in the future. You can see the calendar on my Instagram, matt.rossella. That's matt.rossella. As always, thanks for listening. Please consider sharing this episode with a friend, and I'll see you next time. Dee 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 dee. Blurbs.